drive.
Welcome to Mommy Brain Revisited, the neuroscience of parenting. I'm your host, Dr. Jody Paluski. Today, it's my pleasure to have Dr. Alcelina Hoogsema here with us to talk about her research. She is a senior neuroscientist at the Brain and Development Research Center at the University of Leiden in the Netherlands, and she directs a line of research investigating the neurobiology of pregnancy in women. So welcome, Alcelina. It's great to have you here.
Hi. Thanks, Jody. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah. And now we've known each other for a few years because we've done some conferences together, which has been really nice. And of course, I think your claim to fame in the parental brain world was your 2017 paper that you published looking at brain changes during pregnancy and the postpartum in humans, which is something that had never been done before. So I'm excited to talk with you about parental brain changes and what we know in humans.
Yeah, great. Looking forward to it.
So maybe first off, you can just tell me a little bit about why you're interested in studying the maternal brain.
Well, let's see, many reasons, but I think for me personally, I think for many women, becoming a mother is really one of the most impactful changes you can go through in your life. And it not only affects the woman, but it also impacts a child who's in a very sensitive period. So in my perspective, maternal care and therefore the maternal brain is really at the basis of every life. And yet so little is known on this topic. So so for me, it's just a really incredibly interesting and a very important topic. And it also interests me as a mother, of course, not just as a scientist. So yeah, I think it's just very fascinating to study, really.
Yeah, definitely. And I love that you just said it's like the basis of life. Did you just say that? Anyway, I think that's so true. Yeah. So yeah. Now... Yeah, I mean, we could have talked for a long time about being moms and how it's changed us, but we'll keep to the science today. So in terms of the study, so you did the study in 2017. There's a lot of press about it. So internationally, I'm sure everyone has seen something about this study, which is really great. So now this was your first paper on the parental brain, correct?
Yes. So but this paper, of course, it followed a study of many, many years. Until this finally came out. Okay. And since then I've switched completely to this topic, but indeed there was like a huge amount of press, which was really nice, but also a bit overwhelming, but it's really nice that these results were spread across the world to many women and mothers and people in general. So.
Yeah. So can you share with us like a little bit about the background for that study?
So let's see. So I've always been really interested in brain plasticity. That's the capacity of the brain to change in response to internal or external triggers. And at that time, it was maybe 10 years ago or something when all of this started. I was in a lab with two other female researchers, all junior researchers at the time. And we were all in our 30s. So this topic was personally very relevant. And we talked about this, obviously, and we noticed the lack of research on this because it's really crazy that while it's obvious that much smaller fluctuations in hormones, for instance, they can cause changes in the brain, but hardly anything was known on the brain changes associated with pregnancy, which is probably the most extreme endocrine event of life. So that's how this first study started. It was really just a curiosity-driven side project. And then it took almost 6 years of data collection and then a lot of time on the analysis, which I worked on in my spare time besides my actual research job. So it was quite an adventure. But then in 2017, this paper resulted from a study, which was really exciting. And I was very, very happy with the results.
Yeah, definitely. And it's such a time investment. I think on the podcast, we've interviewed some people that have worked with humans, but many others work with rodent models, such as myself. And in rodent models, often studies go quicker, obviously.
Yeah, their lifespan is much quicker. That's a big
problem. Yeah. Yeah, so you can get, of course, important information from animal models, but when we want to compare to humans, it's always lovely to see research such as yours come out, so we can really see what's going on in humans as well. But it takes so much time.
It takes a lot of time, yeah. Of course, it was also extra challenging because it was more done as a side project, so it doesn't have to take that much time, but of course you're always, you're dependent on the participants getting pregnant, especially if you want to work with preconception scans.
Yes.
Which is good, because then you have a really reliable indication of what happens in a woman's brain. Yeah, these are very challenging studies, of course, but they're worth it, I think.
Yeah, definitely. So you did imaging, so brain imaging.
Yeah.
And maybe you can just tell us briefly about what that technique does or what you measured.
Yeah, of course. So we used magnetic resonance imaging, and it's a technique that uses a very strong magnetic field, and it allows you to visualize tissues inside your body or inside your brain, so it can sort of take a picture of the inside of your brain. And then also by looking at changes associated with changes in blood flow, you can also get an indication of brain activity. And in this study, we primarily used it to study brain anatomy, but we also looked at the mother's reactions to their infants, to pictures of their own and other children. In the postpartum period, using a functional MRI.
Okay. So, and in the study, you talked about doing preconception images and images in pregnancy. So maybe you can tell us about who participated, like what were you, how did it work, the timeline for your study, I guess.
Yeah. So we had four groups for this study, and the main one was women who were scanned before and after their pregnancy. And then they were also followed around 2 years after giving birth. Then we had what we call them control women, who were just women who did not undergo pregnancy between the sessions. And then we had a group of fathers who were sort of used as an additional control group because they did not undergo the biological changes of pregnancy, but they did undergo experience-dependent changes of becoming a parent, obviously. And then we had control men for this group who remained childless across the study. So those were the four groups that we work with.
Okay, so you had really these four groups, which is great, because so rarely do we have dads and non-dads in even any of our research with the humans or animal models. So you followed them from preconception, early postpartum, late postpartum, and you scanned them. And then, so what did your, well, tell us about your findings, your results.
So our main results were that we found that pregnancy renders really strong changes in brain structure. So we found this only in the women undergoing pregnancy between the sessions. Okay. And what we found were actually reductions in gray matter volume. And we found that they were primarily in social brain regions. Mm-hmm. And that they lasted for at least 2 years in 2 years into the postpartum period, which is really interesting. And what's also nice is that they were super consistent, and they were actually so consistent that all of the women could be classified by an algorithm as having been pregnant or not based only on the changes in their brains, which is really exceptional.
Yeah, it's remarkable it's so consistent.
Yeah, it was really cool. And some other cool things are so many nice things we found, of course, but I think it's nice also that we found that these changes, they really overlapped with the brain regions that also responded the strongest to the women's babies in the postpartum period. Okay. And that they could actually predict some measures of mother-child bonding. So it seems that there might be some kind of adaptive process that we're seeing that actually benefits the mother's reaction to her child and the mother-infant bond. So it might help a mother transitioning into motherhood in some way, which is really cool, I think.
Yeah, it's super cool. You said that these changes have to do with the social brain areas, but, you know, often we talk about this maternal brain network or maternal brain circuit. So I'm assuming some of these areas where you saw the changes are overlapping, of course, with that neurocircuit as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, I mean, you could say that they're part of the human parental brain, absolutely, although they don't really correspond directly to these core maternal brain regions identified in humans because they're primarily located in these association areas of the cerebral cortex, which is actually the region that, you know, they humans evolved the most from other animals. But now we're also looking in some of these more core substructures that have been identified in animals, and there we see very strong changes too. So, but these regions definitely form part of the human parental brain network, and of course these regions they play a role in many functions and with many regions. But when analyzing like the overlap between these changes in all networks of the brain, I found that these changes are really mostly located in social brain regions that play a region that play a role in the theory of mind mostly.
Maybe you can tell us these social brain regions that you found most effective, which are.
Yeah, so these were primarily located along the anterior and posterior midline of the brain, so the medial frontal cortex, but also the precuneus and posterior cingulate cortex, and then also clusters in the lateral, temporal, and frontal cortex, so the mainly around the superior temporal sulcus and the inferior frontal cortex. So regions that play a role in many functions, but are also very, very important in the ability to infer mental states, so to figure out what someone is thinking, needing, or feeling, which is of course very crucial for mothers to be able to read the signals of her child and to figure out what he or she needs, in that sense.
So now I'm going to ask you about dads since we talked about moms, because I'm always one of those people who is like, well, I feel like most people can parent if they're motivated to do it. So it's a lot of learning involved, of course. But of course, a biological mother, you know, we can probably all agree that she's primed often if she's had a healthy transition to respond really well to her infant. So, and there is some research showing that primary caregiver dads, for example, some work out of Ruth Feldman lab, have some similar brain changes as primary caregiver mothers. So I was wondering what you found in terms of the dads.
Yeah, so what we found in our study that at least at the threshold that we were investigating this, we didn't see changes in the fathers. Although when looking at there are some other studies that actually found changes that seem similar but to a lesser degree in the postpartum period. So it could be that of course also in animal studies, as you know, there are different routes to activating parental care, like by hormonal factors or by a prolonged exposure to the young. So it could be that something similar is happening in humans too, right? That women are primed to adapt for motherhood by hormonal triggers, as they have to be ready right away to care for the infant, while fathers are adapting more to fatherhood at a later stage based on exposure to their children. That's something that might, take place here.
And I guess, like in your study, all the moms, they were first-time moms, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they're also they were the primary caregivers. So I guess, I mean, there's so many questions about parenting and its effects on the brain. I think we have
Yeah.
in the when it's other parents, so allo parent or father. So it's cool, but that's
Yeah,
really
of course. And it's just,
fascinating.
I think that pregnancy is definitely not the only way to optimal maternal caregiving, of course. I mean, to optimal caregiving. Of
No,
course,
de yeah,
we've seen in
definitely.
animal studies and also in humans that there are many paths to reach, I mean, a very good bond with the infant, a very good caretaking. But I think the dads might be an example of this where it just happens in a different way, but it reaches the same results.
Yeah, and I really think it has to do with a lot of, you know, time and learning, the interaction with the infant. So, you know, anyone can be a primary caregiver. It's just that so often in our culture, it's the mother, the biological mother. And also, you know, we have to start somewhere with our research. We really don't know even so much about moms, let alone dads, adoptive parents, foster parents, and so on. So it's
Yeah, exactly. I think we're really at the basis of this research field, and so much still needs to be found out. So we just start with the most common, well, most commonly, and then we can expand on other things. So I'm also looking into second time mothers.
Oh yeah, I was going to ask. Okay,
but I can't keep this secret for a little bit more because I'm still looking at this, but it's very interesting.
Yeah, so this is great. I'm excited to see this work when it comes out.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah,
definitely.
Very interesting.
Now, more recently, you've been doing some work, or you've published some work that's looking specifically at one particular brain region and yeah. mom's behavior. So you've looked specifically at the ventral striatum.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is one of the things we wanted to look in more detail. This is a structure it's very small, and it's not easy to look at it with an automatic demarcation. So we looked at this word really with a highly reliable delimitation approach, where we actually manually delined all slices of the ventral striatum in the brain of each person and each session, which took a lot of work. It really allowed us to reliably investigate whether pregnancy renders any changes in this structure. Because indeed, we wanted to look more in the reward system, because it's known that in mothers, the cues of the offspring, of course, like the smells, they're highly rewarding. Mm-hmm. And like in non-human rats, they even prefer pups over cocaine. Like, it's a very potent reinforcer. So, and also in humans, it's known that the ventral striatum, which contains the nucleus accumbens, is really is activated very strongly in response to pictures or sounds of the infant. So we wanted to look at this in more detail and then see whether there was a relation also between changes in structure and the functional response to the infants after birth.
Okay. And in the study, you had moms and non-moms.
Yeah, we just focused, because it was such a time-consuming approach. We focused on the mothers and the not-mothers.
Again, this was like preconception, early postpartum,
later.
So the same kind of time frame, but just focusing on the moms. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So what did you find then?
So let's see. So the main finding is that we found that the volume was defensive. The volume of the ventral striatum is reduced across pregnancy. And also, like other studies, we found that there were very strong reactions in the ventral striatum to seeing the infant after birth. And what's interesting is that we found that these volume reductions were associated with increased infant-related activity in this structure in the postpartum period. So the stronger volume reductions across pregnancy, they predicted stronger functional responses to the infants after birth, which I think is very interesting, because it suggests that there are these adaptive structural changes in this region during pregnancy that promote its responsiveness, and also the responsiveness of the mother's reward circuit hereby to the cues of her infant, which I think is quite cool.
And I think, like, I also want to say this again, that what you're seeing is a decrease in structure size. And then, you know, the animal literature, some I've done and others have done, we see a decrease in the production of new neurons. And often when people hear this, they're like, oh, so my brain is shrinking. Oh, I am, like, this is why I can't remember anything or whatever. But the point is more isn't necessarily better. It's how you use it. And what you're showing is that this decrease is actually really correlated with how rewarding you're finding your infant. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I get this all the time. People thinking, no matter how much, you know, nice things you tell around it, people still remember, like, oh God, you lose some of your brain. But it's, you know, sometimes it's actually more, like, for instance, in adolescence, you know, you also have these reductions in gray matter, which are actually steered by some of the same hormones. And there's part of, at least part of it is driven by synaptic pruning. So it's more of a selective fine-tuning of connections and specialization of networks, really. So we think that might be the case here too. Of course, we can't be sure, because based on MRI images, I mean, many things could underlie these changes in gray matter signal, like changes in a number of neurons, in a number of synapses, glial cells, whatever. But at least now, from the first paper, we already saw indications that, you know, this relation to the mother-infant bond and the localization in these regions that actually respond the strongest to the infant afterwards. And now with the ventral striatum, where we see the actual relation between stronger volume reductions, so less volume indicating more reactions to the infant, so to relevant cues. This is also suggestive of indeed more of a specialization, so a functional specialization rather than a loss of function, which people immediately assume when they hear volume loss, of course.
Yeah, no, definitely. So yeah. I'm going to ask, because of course people are like, see, my brain's shrinking, this is why I'm forgetting everything. And I know we haven't talked about cognition and memory, but maybe you can tell us a little bit, because I know you did some work looking at some memory changes, and maybe you can mention briefly about that.
Yes, so we did, we did some memory tests, but we didn't find any changes in memory across pregnancy. But of course, we only measured before and after pregnancy, so we don't know whether there were memory changes during pregnancy. But what we did see was that there was a significant reduction in hippocampal volume. And then this was actually the only region that increased in volume across the postpartum period. So there seems to be something. I mean, the hippocampus is, of course, very core part of the memory circuit. So there seems to be something definitely going on in this memory circuit. And there were some other studies that have found, behavioral studies that have looked at memory. And they also found that memory was recovering around 2 years after birth. Mm-hmm. I think we do see indications of changes in this memory circuit, but the good news is that these seem to be transient and recovering across the postpartum period.
And I think when we talk about memory in general, there's so many different aspects to think about. So what, you know, we haven't delved into mommy brain or cognition during pregnancy and the early postpartum enough in research in terms of what is being remembered, what is being forgotten. I did a podcast with someone who talked about attention postpartum, and which is also important for memory, of course, but also important for anxiety. So there's a lot of stuff we don't know, and just because, and I think we have to remember that there's so many amazing things going on in our brains, even when they're getting smaller, let's say with the transition to parenting, that, that we're actually, it's a pretty amazing time in our lives.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
But then I guess this brings me to a speculation here, but just talking about mental illness. And I don't think you've done research in this area, but what would you speculate? Would the changes not be as significant then, say, in the ventral striatum if a mom has depression, for example? Or
specifically, of course, in general, I'm assuming almost that these fast changes, they must have an impact also or underlie changes in the mental state of the women across the postpartum period. But so for this, indeed, for mothers with postpartum depression, it seems to be that the experience of interacting with the children is much less of a rewarding one. Mm-hmm. And they also don't show as much activity in the ventral striatum or other reward-related regions in response to their infant. So I do presume that it might indeed be the case that these women are undergoing or undergoing changes that are at least different from healthy mothers. So perhaps changes are not as explicit. Perhaps something else is going on. I don't know, but it could very well be that this is indeed part of the neural substrate of illnesses like postpartum depression. Yeah.
And I guess, I mean, I have here in my notes just to speculate what kind of mechanisms might be involved. And I think you mentioned a bit about hormones, but maybe you can talk a bit more about what you think might be going on in terms of these brain changes with mothering.
Yeah, I think, of course, we can only speculate on this at the time. But of course, considering these unequaled surges that a woman is exposed to during her pregnancy, I mean, I'm assuming that these hormonal triggers are the main factors that are driving these changes. And of course, I'm looking into these hormones in my current studies and see which ones are related to these changes. But and of course, you've seen also in animal studies, right, that the administration of pregnancy hormones can mimic some brain changes and promote maternal behavior. So, but besides that, I'm sure there must be also lifestyle changes associated with becoming a parent. There's so much changing in your life, and of course, the interaction with the infant. It must also have an impact on the brain. Not only also things like sleep loss, for instance. I mean, it's a very intense period. And now in our study, it seemed to be that the changes were mostly related to the actual pregnancy period. Like, for instance, not only no changes in the fathers, but there were no correlations with any of the duration of the exposure to postpartum factors like sleep loss or infant interaction. And other studies looking at the postpartum period, they found no volume reductions at all during the early postpartum period, nor did we find any volume reductions for the first 2 years postpartum. So it seems very unlikely that these volume reductions would result from the postpartum period, which is a period where you have no exposure to postpartum factors like the infant and sleep loss. But it's something we really need to look into, because it's a time of such monumental change, biological, but also your whole life changes, everything, and everything at once. So it's a very complex period also to study, but we should be able to find out more about, because it's probably an interplay between environmental and endocrine triggers that underlie the maternal brain.
So I'm also thinking here, I'm losing my train of thought for a second. Oh yeah, so I wanted to ask you, I'm also thinking here about breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Were your moms breastfeeding or not? And did that have an impact on any of your measurements?
The part of the moms were breastfeeding, and we didn't find any differences between the breastfeeding moms or not, but then these are likely more subtle effects than the pregnancy, yes or no. So it could very well be that these would only surface with a larger sample. So this is also something I'm looking into with larger samples to see where you can see effects of the type of delivery, for instance, whether the women were breastfeeding, how often, how long they were breastfeeding. So far we haven't seen anything, but I'm sure there must be, because also, of course, breastfeeding is associated with its own profile of hormonal changes. And
mode of delivery.
Mode of delivery, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really big...
something that would likely surface in larger samples.
Interesting. So then what's next for your research in this area?
So with my current project and also my next project, which is already planned, I'm studying more about the impact of pregnancy on the brain in more detail. And also, we only looked at a small part now, actually, and now we're looking at the white matter tracts that are connecting these regions. Is there any information on metabolites within these regions that can reveal what's going on and what happens to brain function, of course, in different contexts? But also the second type pregnancy and what factors are driving this, and what are the implications for a mother, of course. Like you said already, you know, I mean, there's likely a relation to peripartum mental health, like postpartum depression, the emergence of this, and memory issues. But I think it's also important to focus on positive changes. It can't simply be the case that pregnancy would just have a negative impact on your functioning without any adaptive benefits that are seen in other species. So I think it's very logical to assume that the hormonal priming of pregnancy would trigger essential changes that facilitate a woman becoming a mother, and which benefit the caring for a child, but might also benefit her in other domains. So, well, these are just a few of the many things I'm looking into now, and we'll look into the next years. But there's enough to do. There's so much to uncover still.
There's so much we don't know. So then, like you said, on so many different domains as well. Environmental, birth, and of course, talking about all the positive changes is, really great and something we need to remember. So for the majority of women, they find the transition really rewarding to be a parent, and of course they respond to their infant and have this relationship that's quite rewarding and beneficial to mom and baby.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of focus on the negative effects, whereas it's good to remember that there seems to be a lot of important and positive things going on too, which it's also why I want to take away the focus a little bit from the memory issues and even mental illness, because it's, indeed, like you say, that the majority experience like a life-changing, wonderful thing that's really, it's that people enjoy a lot. So
yeah, no, definitely. And I think that's important just to look at how fascinating the biology of it is. And we often see, you know, I was Googling something, looking for some images the other day of a pregnant woman or whatever. Yeah. And all you see, you never have, it's very often they're headless.
Yeah.
Right? And so then it's just like, well, yeah, she's pregnant because you see that the uterus has expanded, but there's also a head that's affected. Now we don't see the head changing in size, but there's a brain there. And I think we need to really, I spend more time investigating and acknowledging the impact it has on the brain, but how important those changes are to becoming a parent.
Yeah, absolutely.
So no, this is exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing more research out of your lab.
Yeah.
And we've touched on this already, but I like to ask people what questions in general would you like to see answered in terms of maternal brain research?
Oh, there's so much. I don't even know where to start. Like, I think first we need to know the basics, like what exactly happens in the brain, and then look at all different aspects so we can really understand better which factors are involved, which mechanisms, what's going on. And then, of course, other questions arise, like what happens if you get exposed to this another time? What happens with the fathers, with adoptive parents, all kinds of things. How do these underlie the emergence of postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety? I think these are really interesting avenues that all need to be explored. And I think there's so much research popping up now everywhere in this topic. I think we're really on the way to getting a better understanding of this this important topic. So that's very nice to see.
Yeah, I agreed. I think over the past few years, we've seen a lot more interest from the public, and a lot more researchers have had funding to really look at motherhood and parental brain. So I think this is a great, it's going to be great to see in the next few years how much we learn about the neuroscience of parenting.
Definitely, yeah.
So what's the take home then for parents out there in terms of their brain function?
So, well, try not to worry and realize that, you know, even though you might be experiencing some negative processes like memory changes, this seems to be transient. And there's a lot going on that seems to be positive and helpful. And also try not to worry too much about how you'll cope with when the baby is there, or imagine what your life will be like, because you can just trust biology to bring out the mother in you and help you adapt to this enormous change. I think that would be my take home message. Although try not to worry never helps, of course, but well.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a good point. Trusting biology. I like that.
Yeah, I think we were shaped this way also for a specific purpose. It seems to be some kind of adaptive process that just helps bring out the mother in you. So I think that's a really beautiful thing, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's great. Now, and you're a mom, I'm going to ask you this. And I just out of curiosity, did you experience memory changes during your pregnancy and postpartum?
Oh, yeah, horrible. No.
Oh, interesting.
Especially with the second child, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm only just starting to recover, I think, and she just turned 3. But at least I noticed some recovery now, which is, it was really hard to find words, for instance. I couldn't come up with any, and I lost all languages, like first, you know, my native language is only barely there still. Like I can't speak English anymore. It used to go pretty effortlessly. It was, horrible. But then, I mean, of course, it was also a great period, and I really, really enjoyed it. And
yeah, I was going to ask, like, of course, okay, because I experienced losing words as well, and I think my youngest is 7, so I sometimes I think I'm kind of feel like I'm recovering a bit more. I mean, we still have some sleep deprivation and what have you. But like you said, like I enjoyed being pregnant and postpartum and breastfeeding, although I had lots of trouble with that initially, whatever. But overall, the memory changes weren't dominating my life, I had a very positive experience.
Yeah, for me too. Yeah, I think becoming a mother was really the most wonderful experience I've ever had. So then I'm willing to sacrifice losing some words over this. So yeah, it was a very positive, not for everybody, of course, but for me, it was a really, really positive experience. Being a mom, it's also difficult. It's wonderful. Yes. It's also difficult, right?
yeah, definitely. the joys of parenting. Anyway, so the take home is parents trust the biology. Most people, it works out really well.
Yeah.
Becoming a parent, regardless of if you experience what we call quote unquote mommy brain, which I think we should also focus on mommy brain as being the changes that make us parents, which are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thank you. This has been really great.
Great. No, thanks so much for having me. It was nice talking to you.
Questions, comments, suggestions, get in touch at Mommy Brain Revisited on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. You can also contact me on my website at jodipaluski.com. That's JODIPAWLUSKI.com. Looking forward to hearing from you.
Stripe.